You are listening to the Marilyn Manson Cases Podcast, the podcast discussing the accusations, lawsuits, and legal news surrounding shock rocker Marilyn Manson. Please note topics include allegations of abuse, some may find disturbing.
Hey everyone, this is Lisa from themansoncases.com, and welcome to the third episode of the Marilyn Manson Cases Podcast. In this episode, I have a lot to update you on if you don't follow me on social media, as there has been a lot of updates in the lawsuits. The biggest news in recent days is Esme Bianco's settled and dismissed lawsuit against Marilyn Manson. In People magazine, her attorney is quoted as saying, quote, "Ms. Bianco has agreed to resolve her claims against Brian Warner and Marilyn Manson Records in order to move on with her life and career." And very similarly, Howard Kane, who is Marilyn Manson's attorney, states, quote, "Ms. Bianco has agreed to resolve her claims against Brian Warner and Marilyn Manson Records." Now, I've received a lot of questions pertaining to this settlement and subsequent dismissal, so I chose the best 4 to 5 questions that I've been seeing a lot of, and I reached out to Steve of Southern Law and Andrea Burkhart, who is a criminal defense attorney, which you can both find on YouTube, to help answer these questions. So take a listen, and if you listen to Steve, he will ask the questions, and him and Andrea will both answer. Take a listen.
Question 1. What is your reaction to the settlement and subsequent dismissal of Bianco's lawsuit? Well, generally, cases settle. Almost all cases settle, so not surprised by it, even though this was kind of a standard bearer case in the public's eye. Most cases don't end up that way. So this is a typical trajectory. The court had ordered the parties to participate in mediation, I think, by January 27th. So they did that, and the mediator apparently did a good job and brought them together. In terms of who won the settlement, of course, we don't know that. You don't really win the settlement, but who came out on the better end? I think that's Manson and his team, and particularly Howard King. King's strategy being to manage all of these cases that were filed in several jurisdictions and bring them to resolution without Manson having to stand a jury trial. 3 of the 4 cases are out right now, so that's pretty good. And I don't think Bianco, when she filed this case, imagined she'd be doing some quiet settlement with Manson before the case ever got into the courtroom. So I'm not saying she didn't have good reasons to do it, and I'm not even saying that she and her counsel aren't happy with what happened, but my guess would be is that Manson paid far less than what Bianco had originally hoped for, and she didn't achieve a verdict in this case, and so far at least, and it doesn't look like it, he's not had to make any concession of any bad behavior. So I don't see how you can take that as anything other than good for Manson. Now, if you're on the other side, you can take some solace in the fact that she got her story out there, right? She was able to tell what she says happened. But in terms of results of litigation, she didn't get to the finish line. So I take that as better for Manson, regardless of the amount of money paid. But it's also likely that the amount of money is far less than was originally envisioned for this case.
I think that this settlement is largely favorable to Marilyn Manson. That's not always the case with a civil settlement because there are all kinds of reasons why parties might choose to do that. But I think in this particular case, when the entire justification for the lawsuit was predicated upon finding Marilyn Manson, holding him accountable for the things she has accused him of doing, this idea that other people need to be protected, then settling without any sort of admission of wrongdoing, any type of concession, not even something as anodyne as we maybe misunderstood each other and I'll try to be more sensitive in the future. That just really falls very, very short of achieving that initial goal that she had trumpeted when she announced her lawsuit. So it looks very much like she came to realize she wasn't going to be able to achieve that and got out with what she was able to get from the situation, which is likely a money payoff.
Too. Why might both sides choose to settle versus having this go to trial? Well, going to trial carries a lot of risk to it. Plus, these guys are going to have to go through final discovery and turn over, you know, perhaps their worst secrets to each other and set for depositions. And then you have the trial and witnesses and you don't know what's going to happen. So those are some reasons to not go to trial. There are no guarantees there.
Well, settlement is usually a cost-benefit analysis. You're looking at the likelihood that you're going to win, or on the opposite side, the risk that you're going to lose. You're looking at the magnitude of the harm or the benefit that's going to result from going forward, and you're looking at what it's going to cost you to get there. Getting through the discovery stage is expensive enough. Trial is an arm and a leg. I mean, there's a massive amount of preparation that goes into it. It's going to take several days. At least from Marilyn Manson's standpoint, he's got a very high-end, very expensive attorney. We don't know the details of Esme Bianco's legal relationship with Jay Elwanger, but we can safely assume he's not doing this for free. So it's a combination of those factors. I think on Marilyn Manson's side, it is likely a combination of, look, this is going to be extremely expensive to get through to vindication. And what am I ultimately going to get out of it? Is this case high profile enough, important enough that it will even get public attention? If in the event that it went through a trial and he won, it's nowhere near the profile that Evan Rachel Wood and Ilma Gore's case has. So given that, if he's got limited resources, which, you know, presumably he does, he doesn't have a tree growing money in his backyard, then it makes sense for him to be prioritizing where he needs to allocate those resources. And I can easily see an argument why it would not be this case. As far as Esme Bianco goes, I would expect in likelihood, it's a combination of factors relating to her likelihood of winning. There's been enough discovery going on at this case to this point that they probably have some idea of the respective strengths and weaknesses of their cases. And the risk that if it goes to trial and it goes badly, she comes out, you know, looking not so good, looking like perhaps she, you know, fabricated allegations. And so if she's able to reach a settlement that avoids that consequence, that may be the best case scenario that she's able to achieve at this point in time.
And her settlement's a kind of admission on either side of someone being guilty, innocent, or whatever. Not necessarily. Again, most cases settle. So they can be an admission, and the parties can agree to that, and they can make a statement or agree to not have a statement, or they cannot be an admission, and often it isn't. Often it's just, I don't concede any liability, but it's worth it to me to give you this money to end this case. And the other person is thinking, well, I deserve a lot more, but I'm willing to take less because of the uncertainty of trial, and it's no one's admitting anything. Now, there aren't many details in this case. And I think that's question four, how much of the settlement or other details. I don't think we know any of that. But one detail is that there aren't any details. The statements released by the parties were very short. And you'd think if a concession had been garnered by one side or the other, it would have been part of a joint statement already. So I don't think there will be. And the settlement probably will be totally confidential. Now, having said that, oftentimes at mediation, the settlement is written on a piece of paper in major terms, and then the lawyers go back and hash out and make it into a long contract. So there could be a statement coming after this, but that's less likely, I think, than that they would have had something more prepared to begin with. But again, since this was a hard-fought case, maybe they agreed neither side would say anything until they actually got it all down in writing, and then they'll have a more comprehensive statement. So that's still possible, but I just don't know.
Well, admissions of wrongdoing and apologies are often negotiated as part of settlements. It's something that you can hold out for as a condition for being willing to walk away from your case. But in and of itself, the act of settlement does not establish anything. It's a withdrawal of the claims without them being formally adjudicated. So it does not constitute an admission. There's no way, for example, that it would be used in court to suggest that, oh, you know, Marilyn Manson admitted that he did it because he settled, or that, you know, Esme Bianco admitted it wasn't true because she settled as well. That kind of inference doesn't necessarily follow from it. What's telling to me in this case is the fact that the original justification for it was that public accountability. And certainly from the court process, it appears that Esme Bianco utterly failed in obtaining that. At this point in time, no details of the settlement have been made public other than they're going to result in the dismissal of Esme Bianco's lawsuit. I have heard reports from people who have better connections to the participants here than I do that there was a monetary settlement involved. The amount is undisclosed, but that, of course, I can't confirm or deny through the official court records.
If you don't follow me on social media, then you might not have heard about a leaked zip file as it relates to this lawsuit. Basically, there was a legal filing back in September that contained two live links that should have been redacted. One of them appears to contain the majority of what would have been Esme Bianco's evidence, and a small number of us have seen this zip file in its entirety. We had hoped we could start talking about the contents of the zip file, even if it was only a few of the exculpatory documents, which paints a completely different version of events than what is seen in Esme Bianco's lawsuit. However, it looks like we have to sit tight a little bit longer, as my understanding is the protective order surpasses the dismissal by a certain number of days, maybe even more that I'm fully not understanding yet. But my point is, there is evidence showing a completely different story than what Esme Bianco presented in her own evidence. And at some point, we will be able to discuss it further by showing this evidence to you, and I will be presenting this also on the podcast. There's another update in Marilyn Manson's lawsuit against Evan Rachel Wood and Ashley Ilmagore. This relates to the ongoing anti-slap motions, otherwise known as First Amendment free speech arguments, as both Evan and Ilma are claiming parts of Manson's lawsuit are protected free speech and basically want the accusations removed. To catch you up, if you don't follow me on social media, what happened is back in November, both Evan and Ilma's attorneys filed a collective 190 objections to Manson's lawsuit and evidence he is presenting to fight the anti-slaps. Manson's attorney argued with a court that this is too much, and they received these 190 objections during a holiday weekend, less than a week or two before the original anti-slap court date. The judge then orders that everyone work together and whittle down their objections, while pushing the new court date off to February 7th. And now we are seeing this update in new legal filings, going from 190 objections down to a total of 18 and arguments being summarized in a 55-page brief. But also included was an update from Manson's legal team to remove some evidence he provided to the court. I suspected there might have been some quid pro quo or some sort of strategy in place to why this happened, but I'm not an attorney or a legal expert, yet I did get a lot of questions pertaining to this. So I reached out to Steve of Southern Law on YouTube to answer three of the top questions I was receiving on social media. Take a listen.
Is filing a motion to drop evidence for the anti-slaps normal? Why might an attorney choose to withdraw evidence in this case? So at this stage, the anti-slap, I did a video earlier talking about the judge in this case. She actually wrote an article suggesting that attorneys get together and try and work out anti-slap things before a hearing. And one of the ways to do that would be to potentially withdraw things in the lawsuit itself that were objectionable. So it's certainly within her wheelhouse to expect attorneys to work together to remove evidence if it's not critical to someone's case and it prevents the court from having to rule on things that aren't essential. So pulling out some evidence, if you remember, the judge said, hey, there's like over 200 objections at stake here. I don't want to hear all this. You guys get together and work on this. And they did. So Manson says about this evidence, none of this evidence affects Mr. Warner's opposition to the special motions to strike, as these portions of testimony and exhibits were not cited or quoted in the opposition. So since those things weren't even in his opposition, withdrawing them really doesn't or shouldn't prejudice what he's trying to do in opposing the motions. Instead, it just simplifies the number of objections. So it's not really a big deal at this stage at all. And certainly the judge would expect people on both sides to do that if it would help reduce the objections and it doesn't prejudice their case. Is it possible they would withdrew all that because they know Wood Gore is going to open the door to talk about it at trial with her testimony? If she talks about her son, is she opening the door to ask about the FBI letter because it's in the custody battle? Well, withdrawing at this point really doesn't affect that one way or the other. Again, the evidence being submitted at this point is simply to either support or rebut the anti-slap motions, and that's it. So taking it out at this point doesn't mean they can't put it back in later. So I don't think that's why. I think it's simply because the judge said, you guys have a responsibility to get together and reduce the amount of things that you are fighting about in terms of evidence objections before I hear these motions to strike. There's too much objections going on. You guys confer and reduce that. And they did. They got it down to 18, and that was some concessions by both sides. So the next question is, does everything Manson withdrew only apply to the anti-SLAPP argument, or is it completely out of the lawsuit? So yeah, in terms of what he withdrew, that's just for this anti-SLAPP stuff. He said, hey, look, I didn't even use that stuff to oppose this, so I don't mind withdrawing it. Could he come back with evidence later? Yeah. And remember, the standard for admitting things to oppose the motion to strike or to support it, that's not the same standards as what will be admissible at trial. So it's two different things. They're just trying to fight the motion at this point. Legal expert opinion. Who do you think has the stronger objections? The defendants or the plaintiff, or some kind of mix? And I'm going to say a mix there. It was an eye-glazing exercise to read through that, even though they had condensed it down to a handy 55 pages. And part of the reason is because I feel like what the judge telegraphed that she thinks is material for the motions to strike, I just don't see the objections hitting evidence that would change my mind if I were the judge one way or the other on that. And I guess that's one of the reasons why they were able to get it down from 200 to 18. That leaves like over 180 objections the parties were able to work out between themselves that neither thought was worth fighting for their side of this motion. So I don't think it matters a whole lot at this point for what's going on. And they both sides know how to object and how to make those arguments, but a lot of them are technical based kind of trial type arguments.
Another update in recent days has to do with accuser Ashley Walters. As a reminder, Ashley Walters is purported to be Marilyn Manson's former personal assistant. And if you listened to my first podcast episode, I explained her lawsuit was dismissed with prejudice, meaning she cannot refile a lawsuit against him with the accusations she made. She was given 3 times to argue the facts of her case. By continuously updating her lawsuit to provide these alleged facts, she would argue in court. However, the judge dismissed her lawsuit because of the statute of limitations and because her lawsuit provided, quote, too few facts. I was surprised to also learn most people are unaware she included new allegations of assault by Manson in her second amended complaint, which was a completely new accusation in her lawsuit and never an accusation she made publicly prior to this. Most of her accusations against him were in some sense about her work environment, but I'll get more into that in another episode. In recent days, though, we have seen her appeal be dismissed. However, criminal defense attorney Andrea Burkhart did some more digging into this, and it appears Ashley Walters has until February 8th to reverse or remedy this situation. So I reached out to Andrea Burkhart and asked if she could explain the situation to us from her point of view. Take a listen.
So in Ashley Walters' case, it appears that what happened is back in November, right around the time that we're negotiating and gearing up for her deposition, her attorneys requested a 45-day extension of time to file their brief in her case. Them filing the brief is a necessary part of the process to keep it moving forward. If they don't do that, the process is considered abandoned. And it can be dismissed for that reason. So that extension put the new deadline into basically the middle of January. And it appears from what we can see from the court records that the attorneys did not file the brief, nor did they file another request for an extension of time. As a result, the court gave notice that her appeal is being dismissed, but they did set a deadline for that dismissal to take place. That is not until February the 8th. And so typically what that means is that they're notifying the attorneys in case this was an oversight. Those things do happen. Courts do prefer to address cases on the merits and not just throw them out for procedural reasons. So they're giving the attorneys an opportunity to realize they made a mistake here, fix the problem, and go in and file the brief by that February 8th deadline in order to avoid it being dismissed. So I read that as meaning that the case has not formally been dismissed at this time, but if the brief isn't filed in another week, 10 days or so, then that is going to happen. Walter's question number two, is this normal for someone with five attorneys between two law firms to miss an important deadline in an ongoing appeal? Well, it's not unheard of, but it certainly is peculiar for a few reasons. We see from the process already that they clearly know how to ask for more time if that's what the concern is. If they're just not ready to file it yet, there is a process to go into court to ask for an extension. They have already done that once, so they would know how to do that. Now, a possible explanation here is that the appeal is already going to go away for some reason. A settlement behind the scenes. Ashley Walters has pulled an Ashley Smith line and is cut and run. The attorneys are planning to get out of this situation and, you know, try to cut their losses. Under these types of circumstances, I could see a scenario where the attorneys would decide, look, I'm just not going to deal with this appeal because they know the court's going to dismiss it as abandoned if we just don't do anything further. And that is the least expensive option for them. You know, it would, silly as it sounds, cost them time and money to write up a document saying, please dismiss the appeal. Please withdraw us as counsel. Please, you know, do whatever needs to be done to get something on record explaining why nothing further is going to take place. It's easier to just ignore it and let it go away. That said, certainly not the most professional way to handle a situation like that. Have to think that if these lawyers regularly practice in the Court of Appeals, that would not be something they would choose to do as a strategic matter, because it makes them look kind of bad. So I am not entirely sure what to make of this situation at this point in time. I don't want to rule out that it was in fact an inadvertent oversight. Like I said, sometimes it does happen. The deadline just doesn't make it into the calendar. It slips your mind and, you know, then you got to scramble to try to get things taken care of. But given the fact that we have also seen documentations that suggested there was a possibility of a global type of settlement going on, and that we did see this settlement with Esme Bianco materialize, it would not surprise me if potentially Ashley Walters is part of that as well, agreeing to drop her appeal. And so as a result, they are just taking no further action on it. That's, you know, a possible explanation. I don't have any evidence to support that that is what's actually going on, but it is the situation that, to me at this point in time, seems the most likely.
One last accuser we're going to talk about quickly relates to the accuser known legally in legal filings as Jane Doe. In recent days, there has been a new legal filing related to the protective order in her lawsuit. If you have listened to my podcast, especially the first episode, then you already know that there have been ongoing issues related to her anonymity, as she allegedly made public accusations against Manson, which I speculate means her name is likely in the media when she made these accusations, yet it is up to the judge to maintain or remove this anonymity. So to me, this could be very interesting to see how this plays out in Marilyn Manson's lawsuit against Evan Rachel Wood and Ashley Omegore, as Manson alleges a conspiracy to cast him as a rapist and abuser. And we've already seen some familiar names pop up in that lawsuit in the conspiracy, such as Esme Bianco, Ashley Morgan Smithline, and possibly even the actress Charlene Yee, who made highly publicized accusations against Manson during the height of the Me Too movement, claiming Manson was on the set of the show House, and alleges he made racist statements and other comments towards her. Yet, as highly publicized as this was, I have yet to read anyone on the same set substantiating her accounts. But I digress. As it relates to Jane Doe, some of her updates can be a little confusing as they seem to mesh together with her issues fighting to maintain this anonymity. So I asked Steve of Southern Law, an attorney, which you can also find on YouTube, to briefly explain this update for us. Take a listen.
Looking at the recent amendment of the protective order in the Jane Doe case, let me flip to that. They agreed to amend paragraph 7, and this was the parties agreeing to this and not a motion to the court that was disputed. And it simply says that for a potential witness, for discovery or for the trial, and they don't have the confidential information, things designated confidential, you can show it to the witness, provided that prior to that, the witness is given the protective order and the stipulation, and they sign a document agreeing to be bound by the terms of the order. And this, I think, goes to help Manson with his objections earlier in this case that how's he going to do discovery if he can't show witnesses the identity of Jane Doe or some of the things about Jane Doe in the proper context. The court kind of suggested last time the parties could come up with something. It appears they have done that. So I don't think this is a major deal. Often this really is in a confidentiality order. Anyway, I didn't go back to look to see why it wouldn't have been in this case. So I think it's kind of standard procedure at this point. Nothing too exciting.